question in the middle of the first week of school. Zoe doesn't even seem to get along with Connor, so she probably wouldn't skip with him. And besides, I can't remember the last time Zoe missed a day. And yes, this is something I pay attention to. Some people use energy drinks or coffee, but for me, a few glimpses of Zoe is the jolt I need to power through each day. I usually get my fix at least twice, once before homeroom, her locker's down the hall for mine, and then at lunch. I'd love to call her absence a coincidence. On a different day, maybe I could. But not after what happened yesterday. Connor and Zoe both being absent today of all days has to mean something. And not to be a total narcissist, but I have this terrible feeling that that something leads straight back to me. I hope I'm wrong. Maybe they're both in school and I just haven't spotted them. Or maybe they both have the flu and that's why they're out. A few tables away, Jared is half eating and half computer staring. I tap him on the shoulder. What? He says without looking up. Can I talk to you? I'd rather you didn't. Understood, but it's not like I have anyone else to turn to, and this is serious. Have you seen Connor Murphy today? Or Zoe Murphy? Well, well, well. I saw you talking to Zoe yesterday. Finally making the move, eh? No, it's not that. Do you need help locating the vagina? Jared says. I'm sure there's an app for that. He laughs at his own joke. He still hasn't looked at me. Or a vagina, I'm guessing. I scan the cafeteria for my dark nemesis or his much nicer sibling. It's hard to tell. They could be in here somewhere. I turn back to Jared. I just want to know if you've seen her. No, I haven't, Jared says. But I'll definitely tell her you're looking for her. No, please don't do that. He finally looks up. It's already done. Don't mention it. As I'm leaving, he asks. Or what? Excuse me? He points to my cast. I purposely wore long sleeves today even though it's like 90 degrees out. Only the last two letters of Connor's name are visible. The O and R. Connor covered so much real estate with the signature I wasn't able to hide the whole thing. Death, I answer. Life or death. I don't know why I say it or what it means, but it feels true. And not just today, but always. My cast is fully exposed in gym. Today is our physical fitness assessment. We take the test once at the beginning of every year and once at the end. Probably my two least favorite days of school. Miss Bortle has us in a row on the basketball baseline. Maggie Wendell, the captain of the girls' varsity soccer team, models each exercise as Miss Bortle delivers instructions. I look down at my arm. How am I supposed to do a pull-up? I mean, I can barely do a pull-up when I have two functioning limbs. Forget trying to do it with a cast covering half my hand. Actually, same goes for a push-up. I see my way out of this assessment. Finally, this cast shows its silver lining. When Miss Bortle is finished with her speech, I walk up to her and display my cast. She seems repulsed by the sight of me, as if merely by standing next to my soft, broken body, her muscles might become infected. I have to admit, it's impressive the work Miss Bortle seems to put into her physique, especially for someone that age, probably older than my mom. Still, I find it a little unfair that she's judging me without knowing exactly how I sustained my injury. What if I slipped off a roof while building a house for the homeless? Or what if I got injured while battling some racist dude? Miss Bortle asks, "Do you have a note for that?" For that. A note? I say. A doctor's note. I think my mom emailed it to the office. She mutters something that I can't make out. I do, however, hear her sigh as she sends me off to the bleachers. A few kids of a certain body type watch me with envy. I managed to dodge one bullet, but the real shooter's still out there. Okay, I probably shouldn't joke about shooters, or even think it, but how can I not? We have lockdown drills to prepare just in case there really is an attacker in school. According to the statistics, it's usually not an outsider, but someone from the community. I sometimes imagine which one of us it would be coming through those doors. It's a simple process of elimination. In the past, when I've cycled through all the possibilities, my wheel of misfortune has, I must admit, on occasion, landed on Connor Murphy. Honestly, I don't think Connor has it in him. He's not actually a violent guy. Sure, he shoved me yesterday at lunch, but that was because of a misunderstanding, just like this business with my letter. Then again, that's what people always think before something heinous happens. Then, after the fact, they say, "Oh, I always had a feeling." Really, though, what do I know about what another person is capable of? I still don't have a clue what I'm capable of. I keep surprising even myself. Connor and I were in the same class in first grade. I remember him crying a lot. I never knew why he was crying. I just know that I was never surprised when it happened. That's what Connor did. He cried. That was a long time ago, and Connor is way different now. But maybe I can find him and talk to him. He's unpredictable, but not unreasonable, I think. If I explain what the letter really is, maybe he'd agree to keep it a secret. I glance up at the clock behind the basket. The day's nearly over, and the worst has yet to happen. Maybe for once I should really try to heed Dr. Sherman's advice and choose optimism. Connor could have tossed my letter in the trash right after he took it. Why do I think he cares about me at all? He's probably off getting high somewhere and has forgotten that I even exist. All that sounds lovely, except it still doesn't explain one thing. Where's Zoe? It's obvious what probably happened. Connor showed her the letter and convinced her that I'm some creepy stalker, and the two of them spent the day downtown securing a restraining order against me. They think I'm a threat. Me! Hilarious. If it wasn't that exactly, it was something equally disastrous. When the final bell rings, I skip the bus and walk home instead, trying to fend off all the terrible terrors in my head. I reach my house with no recollection of how I got there. The next day is almost identical, but worse in a cumulative sense. Again, there's no sign of Connor Murphy. One moment I'm certain he's about to appear and humiliate me into oblivion, and the next I'm convinced I've blown this letter thing way out of proportion. In a single day filled with so many moments, the world ends, and it carries on. Now I'm home again, and none of my usual methods of escape are doing the trick. I tend to watch a lot of movies. Ideally, documentaries about loners, outcasts, pioneers. Give me cult leaders, obscure historical figures, dead musicians. I want people with rare diseases and unusual talents. I want to see a misunderstood person who someone is finally taking the time to understand. One of my favorite documentaries is about this nanny named Vivian Meyer, who happened to be one of the world's greatest photographers, except no one discovered her talent until after she died. Tonight, I tried watching a movie about Edward Snowden, the whistleblower who had to flee the United States and seek asylum in a foreign country. Seeing this guy have to live every day of his life in constant fear only amped up my nerves. If I could just talk to someone. I've been stuck with my own thoughts for 2 straight days now. Dr. Sherman was no help, and even if my mom were home, I couldn't confide in her about this. I mentally flip through the very short list of people I could possibly turn to in my hour of need. There's really only one name that fits the bill. Jared Kleinman may laugh at the Holocaust, but on the plus side, at least you never have to guess how he's feeling. I could use a dose of his unfiltered honesty. I message him and explain what happened with Connor. A letter to yourself? What the crap does that even mean? It's like some kind of sex thing? No, it's not a sex thing. It was an assignment. For what? An extra credit thing. Why are you talking to me about this? I didn't know who else to talk to. You're my only family friend. Oh my God. I don't know what to do. He stole the letter from me, and now he hasn't been at school for the last 2 days. That does not bode well for you. Neither has Zoe. Huh? What is he going to do with the letter? Who knows? Connor is batshit out of his mind. Do you remember 2nd grade? He threw a printer at Mrs. G because he didn't get to be line leader that day. I forgot about that. I just don't want him showing the letter to anyone. Do you think he will? He's going to ruin your life with it. For sure. I mean, I would. On second thought, maybe I prefer my honesty filtered. I feel like Connor and I were actually having a civil conversation before he read my letter. It seemed like he might have even felt bad about pushing me earlier in the day. I mean, he didn't have to walk over and hand deliver my letter to me, or sign my cast. It was sort of classy.
An image appears on my screen, sent from Jared.
A gorgeous, razor-thin girl leaning against a brick wall, windswept hair falling over one eye, provocative stare straight into the camera lens. Who's that?
The Israeli chick I told you about. The one I hooked up with.
The only time I've ever seen a girl hold out the end of her skirt like that is in a clothing ad. This photo has to be from a catalog or something.
She looks nice.
Almost like a model.
Yeah, she's done a little modeling. Definitely better than spending the summer hanging out with trees. Who the hell becomes a park ranger anyway?
Apprentice park ranger.
Even worse.
The guidance counselor at school suggested it. Well, sort of. I met with her last year to go over my college plan, and she handed me a list of summer activities that would look good on my applications. Park ranger apprenticeship was really the only thing I thought I might be suited for. When I told Dr. Sherman about my choice for a summer job, he didn't give me the reaction I'd been hoping for. He was concerned I was falling into old habits, retreating from the world instead of engaging with it. I admit that was one of the things that first attracted me to being a park ranger, the idea of being alone with nature. It ended up being much more than that. But Dr. Sherman was right. Spending the summer away from my normal life made it way more stressful when it came time to go back. By mid-August, I started to panic about the summer ending and the school year beginning. Also, I realized that avoiding people didn't actually ease any of my anxieties. Out there in the woods, I still had to live with myself. I shut my laptop and re-noticed Connor's name on my cast. It's like he's taunting me from afar. I try to scratch the letters away with my nails. Obviously, it's no use. I walk to my window. It's pitch dark outside. For the most part, I've always preferred night to day. At night, it's okay to be hunkered down in your house. During the day, people expect you to be out and about. You can start to feel pretty guilty about wasting so much time indoors. But right now, as I'm gazing out into the darkness, I don't feel any sense of comfort. I notice something out there. A shape. What is that? What I originally assume is my neighbor's bush now resembles a figure. The figure just stands there, seeming to look right at me through the window. I switch off my lamp to see more clearly, but when I turn back, heart racing, the figure, if that's what I really saw, isn't there anymore. Totally vanished from sight.
Chapter 5. The next morning, in AP English, as Mrs. Kiechek is rattling off the images, characters, and themes she wants us to look out for in Bartleby the Scrivener, an announcement comes over the loudspeaker. Everyone, all at once, turns and looks at me. I'm already on edge, even more on edge than I usually am, because for the third day in a row, my letter is still not in my possession, nor has it been leaked, nor has the person who stole it shown his face. And neither has his sister. I would call this, what I'm in right now, full-on panic mode. But really, I'm not sure I've ever felt this particular level of alarm. It's almost hallucinatory. Even Mrs. Kiechek is looking at me. It takes more than a few seconds to realize why I'm suddenly the center of the class's attention. That was my name that was just called over the loudspeaker. Me? Evan Hansen? I'm not the kind of person who gets called to the principal's office. Isn't that saved for, like, delinquents, class clowns, and fuck-ups? People whose actions affect others? I don't affect anyone. I'm non-existent. Evan, Mrs. Kiechek says, confirming that, yes, my ears are in working order. The principal wants to see me. Now. My level of clumsiness is directly proportionate to the number of people watching. With roughly 25 sets of eyes now trained on me, I'm squeaking my chair out, ramming it into the desk behind me, kicking the contents of my unzipped backpack onto the floor, and nearly tripping over someone's foot while making my way through the aisle. My mind is a slideshow of worst-case scenarios as I walk through the empty halls to the main office. The same image, character, and theme run through my mind. Letter,
Connor, shame. In 3 years, I've had only one interaction with the principal. When I was a sophomore, I placed third in some lame short story contest, and Mr. Howard presented me with an award at one of our general assemblies. My story was based on a childhood fishing trip I took with my dad and was basically a poor ripoff of Hemingway's Big Two-Hearted River. I wouldn't be surprised if Mr. Howard had no recollection of that day, because, really, the contest was that forgettable and third place is essentially the same as losing. But why does Mr. Howard want to see me today? Reaching the office, I try to wipe my palms on my shirt, but they won't get dry. I give my name to the secretary, and she points at the open door behind her. I inch my way toward it like a cop nearing a dark corner. Except I'm not the cop in this scenario. Principal Howard is the cop, which makes me the criminal. Dr. Sherman says that I tend to catastrophize and that nothing is as bad as I imagine it will be, but this right here is proof positive that all my worrying over the past few days was warranted. All the parts of this equation, no Connor plus no Zoe plus my stupid letter plus my getting called to the principal's office, add up to an amount of humiliation and doom I can't even compute. I poke my head into the room. I don't see Mr. Howard, but there's a man and a woman sitting across from his desk. They look confused by my arrival. There's nothing important or official about the room, definitely not what I imagined for the headquarters of a principal. But that's Mr. Howard's face in all the pictures, so I must be in the right place. The man is bent over in his chair, elbows on his knees, thick shoulders filling out every inch of his suit jacket. The woman is in a daze, her bloodshot eyes turned in my direction but not quite seeing me. Sorry, I say because it feels like I'm interrupting something. They said on the loudspeaker for me to come to the principal's office? You're Evan, the man says. Not a question, but not a question, so I nod in affirmation. He sits up and finally takes a proper look at me. Mr. Howard stepped out. We wanted to speak to you in private. He gestures to a free chair. He wants me to sit down. I don't understand what's happening. Who are these people? They look a little gloomy for college reps. Not that I have any clue what a college rep actually looks like. It's just, I heard Troy Montgomery, the star of our football team, had a few college reps come to our school to speak with him. He's an athlete, though, and apparently a very talented one. And I'm just a kid who placed third in a second-rate short story contest once. So who are these people and what do they want with me? I take a seat, even though the voice in my head is telling me to remain standing. The man adjusts the end of his tie so it falls straight between his legs. We're Connor's parents. This is it. The worst that could happen. I waited and waited, and it's finally here. But I still don't know what it is. Why do Connor Murphy's parents want to speak to me? And in private? I can't believe these are the two people who made Connor Murphy, and Zoe Murphy for that matter. It's hard to imagine that both Connor and Zoe came from the same source. Where does Zoe get that hint of red in her hair? And why is Connor so skinny when his father is built like a tank? When you look at my mother and father, I think it's pretty clear how that combination produced someone who looks like me. Mr. Murphy places his hand over his wife's. Go ahead, honey. I'm going as fast as I can, she hisses. I thought it was uncomfortable when I was younger watching my own parents argue. Turns out, watching other people's parents do it is exponentially more awkward. I'm assuming I'm about to learn why both Connor and Zoe have been absent from school the last few days, and if they're interested in telling me of all people, then this can only relate to my letter. There's just no other link that connects all three of us. But it's interesting, isn't it, how Mr. Murphy introduced himself and his wife as Connor's parents, as opposed to Connor and Zoe's parents. Of course this is about Connor. Of course. The question is, what did he do now? After a long silence, Mrs. Murphy removes something from her purse and presses it into my palms. This is from Connor. He wanted you to have this. Before even looking, I know what it is. I feel it. My letter. It's back, finally, in my possession. But I can't exhale yet. Who knows what path it took to get here and whose eyes it fell under along the way? If Connor wanted me to have this, why didn't he give it to me himself? Where is he?
We had never heard your name before, Mr. Murphy says. Connor never mentioned you. But then we saw Dear Evan Hansen.
The thought of Mr. and Mrs. Murphy reading my letter is embarrassing, for sure, but it's not the same kind of embarrassing as having Connor read it. Or Zoe. That's what I'm really interested in knowing. Who else saw this letter? And how did it get inside Mrs. Murphy's purse?
We didn't know that you two were friends, Mr. Murphy says.
I want to laugh. If these people knew the torture I've experienced over the last 48-plus hours because of their son, they certainly wouldn't call us friends.
We didn't think Connor had any friends, he says.
Now that's a more accurate observation. From what I can tell, yes, Connor is a true loner. We do have that in common.
But this note, Mr. Murphy says, it seems to suggest pretty clearly that you and Connor were, or at least for Connor, he thought of you as...
He pauses again. I thought I had trouble getting my words out, but Connor's parents are really having a difficult time getting to their point. He gestures to the letter.
I mean, it's right there, Dear Evan Hansen.
I appreciate them returning my possession, but I'd rather not have to talk about what this letter actually says. It's humiliating enough just sitting here. Maybe it's humiliating for them, too. Maybe that's why they seem so agitated. Just like Zoe, they've probably had to apologize for Connor 1,000 times, and they're just plain tired of it. At this point, I would very much like to take my letter and get out of here. Unfortunately, Mrs. Murphy has more to say.
Go ahead, Evan. Read it.
I don't have to. I know every single word by heart. I've imagined what these exact words would look like running across the ticker display in front of our school, or reproduced in the school paper, or written in smoke across the blue sky. I've imagined every single possible way that Connor Murphy could use them against me. I opened my mouth for the first time since I entered the room, but I don't know what to say.
It's okay. You can open it. It's addressed to you, Mr. Murphy says. Connor wrote this to you.
I thought it was me who was confused. Turns out they're way more lost than I am.
You think Connor...
Just when I thought this couldn't get any more uncomfortable, I now have to explain that I am my own pen pal.
No, I say, you don't understand.
Yes, Mrs. Murphy says. These are the words he wanted to share with you.
His last words, Mr. Murphy adds.
Again, the message doesn't arrive right away. I look to him, to her. What I understood to be humiliation on their faces a moment ago now, suddenly, resembles something very different.
I'm sorry, what do you mean, last words?
Mr. Murphy clears his throat. Connor is gone. I don't know what that means. Sent to boarding school? Ran away and joined a cult?
He took his own life, Mr. Murphy says.
He clenches his jaw. She dabs her eye. Not humiliation. Devastation.
He... What?
I say.
But I just saw him last night.
What are you talking about? Mrs. Murphy says with new energy in her voice.
I'm not sure, I say. I thought it was him. It was dark.
It happened 2 nights ago, Mr. Murphy says, seeming to speak more to his wife than to me. I know it's a lot to take in.
I couldn't sleep last night. I wondered if it had been Connor standing on my neighbor's lawn looking into my window. But I guess it was just my imagination. My fear.
I need a minute. I need hours. This isn't real. This can't be real.
The letter is all we found with him, Mr. Murphy says. He had it folded up in his pocket.
I finally look at my letter.
You can see, Mr. Murphy says.
He wanted to explain it. It's all there. I read the words on the page. They're my words. The words I wrote. the words I've come to know by heart, but now they feel alien to me. It's like someone jumbled them up and tried to put them back in the same order, thinking no harm would be done, that it would be the same message, but it's not the same message. It's two messages, depending on how you read it. And Connor's parents are not reading it the way I intended. This letter, my letter, they think Connor wrote it. To me. Mr. Murphy recites my words from memory. I wish that everything was different. I wish that I was a part of something. Let him read it by himself, Larry. I wish that anything I said mattered. Larry, please, to anyone. The room goes quiet. I look around. For what? I'm not sure. Help? There's no one. No sign of Mr. Howard. I try to speak. I can't. That familiar rush. Panic. It finds me every day. Sometimes not so intense, but this right now is enough to overpower all my faculties. This letter, it isn't...
Isn't what? Mr. Murphy says.
I catch my breath.
Isn't Connor?
Mrs. Murphy looks at me.
What does that mean?
Connor...
Yes?
Connor didn't...
Didn't what?
Write this.
What does he mean, Larry?
He's obviously in shock.
No, I just... He didn't...
I'm trying to set them straight, but my thoughts keep coming out broken.
It's right here, Mrs. Murphy says, pointing to the letter. I hear a voice. It's been speaking this whole time, but I'm only now paying attention. Coming from within, louder and louder. Go, it's saying. Leave.
I'm sorry, but I should probably...
Mrs. Murphy seizes me, gripping my hands, the letter held in our collective grasp.
If this isn't... If Connor didn't write this, then...
Cynthia, please, calm down.
I avert my eyes. I should go.
Did he say anything to you? Mrs. Murphy pleads. Did you see anything?
Cynthia, honey, this is not the time.
I loosen my grip and the letter is now in her hands, alone.
This is all we have, she says. This is the only thing we have left.
I really should go. Mr. Murphy turns to me.
Of course, he says.
We understand.
We just wanted you to be among the first to know.
Mrs. Murphy hides her face. She's done her best to hold it together.
So have I.
But I can't help her. This woman. She's broken. Completely. And I care. I really do. I understand as much as I can. But I don't know how to be here with her. With them. With myself. I have to leave.
I start, but they catch me.
Before you go, Mr. Murphy removes a business card from his inside breast pocket, flips it over, and begins writing on the backside with one of Mr. Howard's pens. He returns the pen and, with his eyes holding mine, hands me the card. I'm already reaching for it before I know what it is.
The funeral is for immediate family only, Mr. Murphy says, but here's the information for the wake tonight.
I don't know how to respond to this, nor do I have the time.
Mrs. Murphy jumps up from her chair and grabs my outstretched arm.
Larry, look.
It happens so fast I can't stop it.
Look at his cast.
He comes around to see what she sees. There, in permanent ink, is the name of their son.
Mrs. Murphy turns to her husband, an astonished smile forming.
It's true. It really is true. His best and most dearest friend.
From the principal's office, straight to the bathroom. I lean over a toilet, but nothing comes out. My guts are swirling round and round, like I just sat in the passenger seat of a car driven by a blind person, the wheel jerking left to right to left. I want to get past this dizzy feeling, force it out of me, but it won't come up. I return to English class, but I never really return. I can't get back to where I was before I left. I can hear Mrs. Kiechek's voice, but not her words. The bell rings and I rise from my desk. I walk to my next class without my sneakers ever touching the floor. My trance holds all the way to last period. Then an announcement comes over the loudspeaker.
repeating the news I learned hours ago but spent the entire day disbelieving. It is with tremendous sorrow one of our beloved students. Services tonight from 5 to 7 o'clock.
Any students who would like to talk to someone.
Mrs. Alvarez will be available in the auditorium starting now. The news begins to register in those around me. The shock in their faces breaks my daze. It's true. It's really true. Connor Murphy is dead.
1. I thought it was a dream. How could I know? It's not like someone gives you a heads up. Hey, just so you know, you're dead. The day started like any other. A whole happy family seated at the kitchen table, eating breakfast. I wasn't really eating. Neither was Larry. Too busy with his phone. Neither was Cynthia. Too busy serving the rest of us. My parents love it when I call them by their first names. Zoe was the only one actually consuming food. I didn't want to go to school. My mother wouldn't hear it, said it was the first day and I had no choice. School would do me good, she said. She watched me sleep all summer. She was desperate to get me out of the house. But really, what was the point of going to school? They never knew what to do with me. If you don't fit into one of their boxes, you get tossed aside. I could learn way more at home, reading my own books and watching Vice. At least when I was at Hanover, I can mention Nietzsche without a teacher staring back with a blank look. Unfortunately, the whole private school experiment was a bust. Apparently, Adderall to get through finals, or the day, is perfectly okay, but a little weed in your locker is unforgivable. Hypocrites. Maybe now they'll see how ass backward they are. Hey, geniuses, no one dies from marijuana. Pills, though? Yep, you guessed it. Then Cynthia tried to get Larry involved. That's always good for a laugh. You're going to school, Connor, was all he could muster. This really set off my mother that my father couldn't be bothered. They went at it for a while, talking like I wasn't there. Welcome to the Murphy household. If your name is Zoe, strap in for the ride of your life. If you happen to be Connor, well, you're going to want to stay good and numb. I ended up going to school. Some fights aren't worth the effort. I got a lift from Zoe, yet another perk of being me. Your little sister drives you around. All because the Subaru that Larry Luxury handed you like an olive branch is in a recycling heap somewhere. There was no deer in the road that night. I can come clean about that now. I crashed into that tree because I felt like it. My messiest decisions were always like that, made in a split second. 9 times out of 10, I'd walk away only wounded. Then on the 10th time, turns out I was right to want to skip school. I got singled out in homeroom, even though I wasn't the only one on my phone, got messed with in the cafeteria, messed with again in the computer lab. I'm just trying to mind my own fucking business. Not even allowed to do that. And that was only day one. What about the rest of the year? 170-something days left. How am I supposed to get through? I couldn't. I skipped my last two classes, walked right out of the building. I couldn't shake the feeling, free falling, like there's nothing to hold on to. I reached out to the only person I thought might help, and then when that didn't work, I woke up in the hospital. My family was there, all of them, looking at the floor, their phones, the insides of their eyelids, anywhere but at one another or me. I knew what was coming. I'm a fuck-up. I know. Spare me. I got out of bed before anyone could say a word, just left the room. No one bothered to come after me. At the front desk, there were two nurses. One said, "Room 124. So sad. He's the same age as Evan." "I know," the other nurse said, sighing. The first nurse made a call, left a message. "Hey, honey, just checking in. I wanted to hear how the rest of your day went. Did you get any good signatures on your cast? You'll probably be sleeping when I get home, but I'll see you in the morning. I love you so much. I just want you to know that." She put down her phone. hands on her forehead, soothing her temples. I couldn't believe it, who this woman was. I think I know your son, I said. I signed his cast today. She didn't answer, just walked away. Another fan of mine. I figured Evan had told her what happened between us. Probably made it seem like he was innocent, just standing there like a saint, and here comes big, bad Connor Murphy, but he's the one who messed with me. I didn't really mean to push him. Another one of those split-second decisions. Honestly, they're more like knee-jerk reactions or something deeper. Part of my nature. That's just what I do. I ruin things, always, whether I want to or not. The thing I'm ruining can be the best thing in my life, and I'll know it too. And I'll still be powerless to stop it. Or too scared. I turned back down the hall, vowing to be more patient with my waiting family. I reached my room, room 124. I looked in. That's when I saw him. The kid in the bed. It was me. I bent over him, the other me, skin gray, mouth sagged open. I got what I wanted, I guess. I'm free now. No one in my way, no one waiting around a corner, setting a trap, no one checking for redness in my eyes, asking where I've been all night, making promises. I've been hanging here at the hospital. Everyone is beaten up and broken, just like me. Even the staff. They just hide it better than the patients do. Especially that one nurse, Evan's mom. She's kind of a disaster, always rushing around the halls, but she seems decent. Today, on her break, she barely touched her sandwich. She was looking up college stuff for Evan. I can't picture Cynthia doing that, even though I was her life's work. My mother preferred to delegate. She treated me like one of her home renovation projects. Hire help. Call in the specialists, the best in the business. Let's get this kid fixed up. Do whatever you gotta do. Take him overnight or for weeks at a time. Pump him full of meds, solo sessions, group sessions. We've got money, as much as it takes. Spare no expense. Just solve this problem of ours and hurry. My husband's growing impatient, losing faith, asking why throw good money after bad. It hasn't worked so far after all these years. Maybe it's best to abandon the project, stop the work, at least for the time being. Let's wait this thing out, see what happens. And here we are.
Chapter 6. Once I'm home, I message Jared and tell him in a hurricane of words what happened with my letter, how it was finally returned to me, temporarily, by Connor's parents, who were under the impression that it was a letter written by Connor to me, and how they now think that Connor and I were best friends, and how that ridiculous belief was then corroborated when they caught a last-minute glimpse of my cast. After I see all this typed out on my screen, Jared's response seems like the only appropriate one. Holy. Shit. I know. Holy. Fucking. Shit. I know. I tried to tell them the truth. I did. I tried. Holy motherfucking shit. I can't believe this happened. I mean, about Connor. He's really gone. I spoke to him just a few days ago. Now I'll never speak to him again. Or walk past him. Or hear a rumor about him defacing school property. Never. I've known this kid since we were in grade school. He disappeared for chunks at a time and we weren't friends or anything, but he was still part of our whole group, our class, our year. No one I know has ever died before. All my grandparents are still alive. I've never even lost a pet. I guess the closest thing I can relate to is when a famous person dies. You feel like you've spent so much time with this person, watching their movies, listening to their music, and then they die and you feel this swift loss of air and this powerful, full-body sadness. But then pretty soon after, within minutes even, the feeling passes and you go on with your life. But it's been hours now since I spoke with Connor's parents and I still can't calm the waves in my stomach. Of course, Connor's death is just the half of it. The other half is what's really making me uneasy. This whole misunderstanding about us being friends. I have to fix it. Are you going to the wake?
No, why would I?
I don't know, isn't it the right thing to do? I feel like maybe I have to go.
You realize you weren't actually friends with him, right?
I know that, but you should have seen their faces. His mom and his dad gave me this look as I was leaving. I think they expect me to be there. What am I supposed to do?
You stay home. That's what you do.
But what if I run into them one day and they ask me why I never came to Connor's wake?
How often do you run into the Murphys?
What are you supposed to wear to a wake?
How the fuck should I know? My people don't do it that way. We hang at someone's house and load up on pastrami and bagels.
It starts in 2 hours. Can you meet me there? I wait for Jared's response, but it never comes. Who am I kidding? I'm not going to Connor's wake. I'll stay home. It's fine. It's a wake for their son. They won't even notice I'm missing. Besides, it's not my responsibility to be there. Like Jared said, we weren't actually friends. I kick off my sneakers and open my laptop. The goal is to get my mind off Connor, but that's impossible. Everyone at school is talking about him. Rocks.
Rest in peace, bro.
Kristen Caballero. So sad right now.
Broken heart emoji.
Kayla Mitchell. Never thought CM would go out like that. Alana Beck. Still can't believe the terrible news about Connor Murphy. He looks so happy in this photo. It really shows his spirit. This is how we should remember him. Share this post if you agree. Everyone seems to be circulating the same photo of Connor. It must be from a couple years ago, because Connor's hair is short and it makes his ears more pronounced. He's wearing a button-down shirt in light blue, a color I'm not used to seeing on him. And even weirder, he's got a big smile on his face. His arm is wrapped around someone, another guy it looks like, but the other guy has been cropped out of the photo, and all you can see is his shoulder. The whole thing is just odd, because when I close my eyes and picture Connor, the image I see is pretty much the total opposite of this photo. Why would he do this? I mean, I understand how low a person can get. I also know that when you're not in the best headspace, the trivial can turn into the insurmountable, and all of a sudden you're heading down a dark path and you can't find your way back. But what if I'm the thing that happened to Connor? What if he did it because of me and my letter? That pointless letter. I should have never written it in the first place. I finally expressed the truth, and look what happened. It got turned into a lie. I look down at my cast. If I could rip it off my arm, I would. I don't care if I'm not fully healed yet. I want it off. I want him off. As I'm staring at Connor's sloppy signature, I'm reminded of what's in my pocket. I pull out the business card that Connor's father gave me and flip it over to reveal his handwritten message. McDougal Funeral Home. Bowers and Franklin. 5 to 7 p.m. Not only handwritten, but hand-delivered too. That look in his eyes when he gave it to me was so primal. Deeper than words. It was as if he was reminding me that attending Connor's wake was my duty as a man. I look again at the address. The funeral home is within walking distance from my house. How could I not show up? His parents are expecting me. I don't want to let them down. Or Connor. I owe it to him, don't I? I didn't know him well, but I still feel some kind of connection with him. After all this, and it's the right thing to do, to pay respects when someone passes. I'd want others to do the same for me. Actually, now that I think of it, I wonder who would even come to my funeral. My mom, obviously. My grandparents, yes. But who else? Would my dad fly in, or would he just send flowers? I stand up from my bed and swing open my closet door. Buried somewhere in here is a pair of black dress shoes. I can't remember the last time I wore them. Who knows if they still fit? I'll just go for a few minutes, make an appearance. I can clear up this misunderstanding quickly and leave. It's really nothing. And it's the right thing to do.
and maybe it's the only thing that will finally exorcise these demon butterflies from my stomach. According to the map on my phone, I've arrived. It's a nondescript one-story building set back from the road, a parking lot in the rear. I must have passed this place 1,000 times on my way to and from school and never once thought about its purpose. Now, I'm pretty sure, I will never not think about it. On my way up the path, I roll down my sleeves and cover as much of my forearms as possible. After much debate about what to wear, I settled on khakis, my nicest dress shirt, and the black shoes for my closet, which I had to wipe clean with a kitchen sponge. Sorry, Mom. Before I even get close to the building, the front door opens and a suited man steps aside, waiting for my arrival. I had planned on stalling a bit more, lingering until I could follow someone, anyone, inside, but it's too late now. I've been spotted. I pick up my pace. The suited man bows his head as I pass and closes the door behind me. Inside the well-lit hallway, I'm met with light chatter and a trail of perfume. On a side table is a family photo. In it, Connor is just a boy, pale and slight, maybe 10 years old. Zoe stands obediently by her brother's side, hiding behind his shoulder. I miss seeing her face. Maybe it's an inappropriate thought for this moment, but it's true. I wonder how she's been taking this. I hope she's okay. Next to the photo is a guest book that's been signed by 12 people. I don't recognize any of the names. I look back to the suited man who's busy window watching. I write my name in the book. In case the Murphys don't spot me in the crowd, at least there will be proof that I attended. When I reach the end of the hall, my legs shaking, I realize instantly that there's no chance of my presence going undetected. I had thought, as I was nearing this back room, how remarkable it was that my classmates, even at such a somber event, were able to keep their voices so low. Now I know why. They aren't talking, because they aren't here. None of them. Leave. Immediately. Of course that's what I should do. It's obvious. But there's no time. My sudden appearance in the doorway is observed by all. Mrs. Murphy, mid-conversation, makes eye contact with me. There's no way out now. I order my leg to step forward, and then my other leg after that, and pretty soon I'm walking from one end of the room to the other like a regular functioning person. On my way to find a seat, I spot a familiar face that interrupts all the momentum I've built. Mrs. G? What are you? I stop myself. I didn't mean to say any of that out loud. It came out in a spill of surprise, and now I have to clean up my spill. It's good to see you. I mean, you know, it's good that you're here. I don't know what I'm saying. She seems unfazed, lost in her own thoughts. For a second, I wonder if that ponderous look on her face is her trying to identify me as one of her former students. But when she finally speaks, it has nothing to do with me or the clumsy words I've just mumbled. With a stoic smile, she says only, "Connor was a special boy." I nod in agreement and hurry away, finding a seat in the last row of chairs. I stare at the back of Mrs. G's head, the veins in her neck, her short gray hair. She's the last person I would have expected to be here. I never had her for a teacher and was glad for it, because she was super intimidating and had a reputation for being strict. If she saw you in the hall, even if you were barely moving, she'd tell you to slow down. It's no surprise that she and Connor were a combustible combo. And yet, even after he threw a printer at her, she's here. Which is saying something, because there can't be more than 20 people total in attendance. Nearly everyone is an adult. All the men are wearing suits. I'm the only idiot who looks like a waiter. I check around for a hint of red hair. Zoe isn't here, and I can't fathom why that would be. Most of the attendees are gathered around Connor's parents at the front of the flower-filled room. Behind them is the casket. I wasn't expecting to see it. I assumed caskets were reserved for funerals. Thankfully, it's closed. Still, it's hard to ignore its presence. His presence. Where is everybody? Connor Murphy wasn't popular or well-liked, but I assumed some people would be here. We all knew the kid, grew up with him, passed him in the halls. Doesn't that count for something?
Where are Rocks and Kristen Caballero and Alana Beck? They'll post something about Connor online but couldn't be bothered to pay their respects in person. I should have listened to Jared and stayed home. I'll slip out the back door when no one's looking, pretend like I'm going to the bathroom and just keep going. I give my legs a mental heads up, needing them to buy into my plan. But I don't get a chance to refine my exit strategy. Mrs. Murphy's hand goes up and starts swiping at the air. I turn around. There's no one behind me. Her eyes enlarge to better signal her intentions. Yes, it's me she wants. I wish she'd come over to me instead of making me go to her and all those people. Slowly, carefully, strenuously, I stand and will myself to the aisle, past Mrs. G and up to the front of the room. I practice the script I came up with on the walk over. I wrote the letter. We weren't friends, but I liked him a lot. I'm sorry for your loss. I'm missing a few lines, some key explanatory words. My brain is overheating. My socks feel soaked. Mrs. Murphy clears a path, beckons me into her huddle. Mr. Murphy reaches out his hand.
It's good to see you, Evan. Thanks for coming.
His grip is scary strong. I apologize for my sweatiness, but he doesn't seem to hear me. Mrs. Murphy wraps me in her arms, squeezes me harder than my own mother would. Her jagged necklace impales my chest. I'm sorry for your loss. Oh, you're shaking, you poor thing. I wrote the letter, not Connor. She eases up and holds me in such a way that I have no choice but to look her in the eyes. She forces a smile, then turns me around by the shoulders so that I'm facing the others. This is Evan, everyone.
Hi, Evan.
Evan was Connor's closest friend, Mrs. Murphy says. We weren't friends, but I liked him a lot. We're so sorry for your loss. They say this to me. I'm the one they feel sorry for. Mrs. Murphy guides me away from the others and plants me directly in front of Connor's casket. I turn away and face the room. I'm so happy you're here, Mrs. Murphy says, and yet absolutely nothing about her or this place feels happy. I wrote the letter for my therapist. Connor took it from me. The words are right there, but they won't come out. Larry and I were talking, she says, stopping to take a long and deep breath, her hand almost helping her chest draw in the oxygen. We would love to have you over to the house for dinner. We have so many questions about... She pauses again, ingesting more air. Clearly, I'm not the only one having trouble speaking right now. About everything. About you and Connor, your friendship. If you could find a free night to spend with us, we would be so grateful. So grateful. Just to sit down with you would mean so much. I... Think about it. No rush. She exhales and hugs me again before returning to the group. Escape is now possible. I turn for the door, and in my haste, I nearly run into someone. Zoe. I regain my balance as she works through her confusion. What are you doing here? She asks. Such an astute question. If only I had a good answer. She's been crying. I can tell by her puffy pink eyes. I'm sorry, I say. About your brother. Arms crossed. Crossed so tightly, giving herself a hug. She nods, just once. And walks away. I take one more look at him or the box he's in before letting myself out.
2. Mrs. Gorblinski. She actually gave a shit. Other people assumed she was a nemesis because of the story, I guess, the legend. That's what happens with legends. The facts get pushed aside and replaced with something more dramatic. I'm guilty of it, too. I've heard the story so many times, even told it myself. I began to believe the simple version. Connor Murphy threw a printer at Mrs. G. Well, yeah, but... It was a long time ago, second grade. I only remember bits and pieces. We all had jobs. On the wall was a chart. Lunch helper, schedule announcer, board eraser, nurse buddy, recycler, The most prized job of all, really the only one that mattered, was line leader. Everyone wanted to be line leader. For me, it was the idea of being in charge, controlling things. We weren't curing cancer or anything, but trust me, this was all very serious at the time. Each day, Mrs. G moved our names one spot. I waited my turn, watching my name advance. Finally, I was one spot away. The next day, I came to class dressed up, probably. That's how excited I was. But something was wrong. I wasn't line leader. I had a different job. It was supposed to be my day. The class was lining up behind someone else. I called out to Mrs. G, "Connor, it's not the time for questions." She was a real no-nonsense type, everything by the book. There was a right way to do things, an order, and that order was now out of whack. There had been an oversight. Mrs. G would fix this right away. She'd appreciate what was at stake. I told her, "I got skipped." "Get in line, Connor." "But it's my turn to be..." "You heard me." "No, it's not fair." I stepped in front of the line. One of the kids pushed me. I tried to explain. I felt myself getting hotter, the room closing in, tears forming. "Connor, please find your place in line." "But, Connor, I won't tell you again, but it's my turn to be line leader." I reached out for the first thing I could find, felt the printer with both hands, and swept it off the desk. It slid across the floor, stopping at Mrs. G's feet. The tray broke off, flew to the other side of the room. The room went silent. All eyes on me. Miss Emerson escorted the class out. Mrs. G stayed with me, tried to calm me down. I couldn't even look at her. And that's it. As far as everybody knows, that's where our story ends. I freaked out and threw a printer at Mrs. G. But it wasn't the end. The next day, the printer was back in place, back on the desk, minus the tray. And on the job chart, I was line leader. And Mrs. G had moved my seat closer to her desk. She gave me a little pad. If I had a problem or question, I could tear a blank page from the pad, crumple it into a ball, and place it in the glass jar on her desk. She wouldn't stop teaching the class on my behalf. "I won't tolerate any more disruptions," she said. But she promised that if I placed a ball in the jar, she'd see it. And when the time was right, she would get to me. But I had to be patient. If I was, she would listen. She would hear me. I would be heard. Everyone in school knew about the printer. It became this thing that followed me around. The logline to my movie, telling people what to expect of me. Telling me what to expect of myself. I was the villain. That was my role. And Mrs. G was the victim. And for years, that's been our story. But it demands a correction. She made a mistake. And so did I.
Chapter 7. On my way home from Connor's wake, I text Jared, typing faster than I can walk. Why did I go? I told you not to. I was just trying to do the right thing. Who told you to do that? They invited me over for dinner. They want to know more about Connor and me. About our friendship. This is getting good. When are you going? I don't think I can do it. Take pictures. I'd love to know what that house looks like. I stop at a busy intersection, cars whizzing by. It's after 7 now. My Oxford shirt feels like it's strangling me. All I want to do is climb into bed and hide under the covers. Lately, every time I leave the house, I only end up making more trouble for myself. The signal changes and I resume walking and typing. So you think I should go to dinner? Now you have to. What are you going to tell them? The truth. I need to tell them the truth, once and for all. The truth. Really? Yes. You think you're going to go to the Murphys' house and explain to them that the only thing left they have of their son is some weird sex letter that you wrote to yourself? You do realize you could go to jail for this, if you get caught, right? But I didn't do anything.
Yeah, I hate to tell you this, Evan, but you may have already perjured yourself.
Isn't that only when you're under oath? Like in a courtroom?
Well, weren't you